you are joining We the People Radio. You're joining me in my car, and Bill happens to be at a trade show. So I'm Aaron Ryan, but the only live person in the studio is Bob Martin. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Aaron. You of course, are live. You're just over the phone at the moment.
Over the phone, because today's going to be kind of a different show, not really different as far as topics go, but for those of you who've been listening in the last year or two, we've had a friend who calls periodically. His name is Mike Adams. He always signs into the chat room as Horse Creek Mike. And Mike was not very old, but he passed away in October this last year. And just because of where he lives and the configuration of his property and the way things were situated, no one wanted to make that public until his, things were taken care of. He was a big gun collector, okay? I'll just say it. That's not really a surprise. Anyway, he had the best reloading room ever. You know, it was like going to the store. Anyway, I met Mike when we started the Tea Party up in Wairika, so back in 2010 at least. And he, initially it was like, oh, who is this guy? He's such an interrupter. And then he was such an interrupter, like Mr. Know-It-All. And the more I talked to him, probably the second or third time I met him, we chatted after the meeting, and he knew a lot about a lot of things. Mike was a Coast Guard veteran, very involved in veterans' issues. He utilized the White City facilities up there, so he always kept me up to speed on what was going on with VA on that end of the world. We had lots of chats about politics, and he was a big supporter of the radio program, always was a supporter. When we used to do the annual fundraiser, Mike would come down to Reading, and he would stay at our house. So, of course, then in the next public venue, he would make sure and tell people that we slept together, which was just Mike's sort of humor. Of course, Bill was there, but, you know, anyway, it just was always funny. He just was a funny guy. So, anyway, one of those people who's gone too soon. But I look back in the archives because he was a suction dredge miner and really gave me a tremendous education in mining. I learned a lot from Mike over the years, and that was really his passion. So I thought, gee, you know, I'm headed up to his memorial today in Fort Jones because he was also the president of the Protect Our Water Group up there. And I thought, gee, I should play one of those old shows. It was 5 years ago yesterday that we aired that program. So the show today will be one that Elizabeth Woodward and I co-hosted back in the days when Elizabeth was there. But the information is all still good.
That was back when Bill was getting his coffee.
That was back when Bill would stick his arm into the recording room, you know, the actual radio apparatus room, but he wouldn't come in. He would never come in. Yeah, you're right. That was kind of funny. Now Bill chatterboxes on the radio with us all the time.
You never know, he had Mike fried at one time.
Just by way of, sneak preview for next week, I have a national security expert out of Chicago, actually, who is working with the company that's securing the border. They've got the oversight to secure the border and build the wall and do all that good stuff. And so for all those of you who've been told that building the wall will do nothing and will never secure the borders, Mr. Bruce Moran would beg to differ, and he'll be giving us all the info next week. I think we might also have a couple of people from his company, but that remains to be decided. But that's the topic for next week on the, 12th, I guess?
Next week would be Sunday, March 12th, yes.
There you go. I'm a lot smarter in my car than I am in the radio studio, apparently. I should always do the show from the car. Alone, so I'm not, you know, distracted by all of you.
We'll have to get you an ISDN line.
Yeah, I'll have to put on some little blinders there so I don't get all fidgety with you and Bill there in the studio. Well, thanks a lot for getting this all put together for us, and I hope everybody enjoyed a little bit more about mining, and fond farewell to our friend Mike Adams.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much for that introduction, and all of us here are sorry for the passing of Mike Adams, but we can honor him by replaying his program on
exactly.
The topic of mining that, like you said, was 5 years ago yesterday, March 4th, 2012.
Exactly. So, fond farewell to Horse Creek Mike, who won't be joining us in the chat anymore, which is really unfortunate because he was always really funny. So have a great day, and it's a lovely drive. It's a great time to drive to Fort Jones.
All right. Well, how's the weather heading up that way?
It's actually quite nice. It was it rained on me. I was in Wairika last night, of course, because I always seem to do this trip repetitively. I was up there for work. So it was raining and monsoony, and today it's sunny and nice. They said they had snow, though, a couple inches in Fort Jones, and they had an inch in Wairika today.
All right. Well, drive safely. We'll see you back here in the studio next week.
Absolutely. So there you go.
All right.
You got a memorial, you got a weather report, and a sneak preview next week.
All right, very good. Thank you, Aaron Ryan, joining us live via cell phone as a way of introducing our replay from 5 years ago on mining with special guest, the late Mike Adams.
Sunday morning, because what else could you possibly be doing but listening to We the People Radio with your hosts Aaron and Elizabeth and Bob Martin, our sound engineer.
They might be sleeping.
And our master of music. I can't imagine doing anything else on a Sunday morning.
Exactly.
Bob?
Seriously. Bob, say something.
Should we tell them?
Tell them what?
Go ahead, tell them.
Tell them this isn't really Sunday morning.
All right. That's why we don't sound like we just rolled out of bed, took a fast shower, and just speeding across town.
We did take a fast shower and speed across town, but we hadn't just rolled out of bed.
Yeah,
God,
it's in the afternoon. It's in the afternoon.
No, this is actually Wednesday afternoon.
So we're doing this ahead of time so that we can make sure and get the information for today's show on Sunday to you, because the comment period for suction dredge mining ends on Monday. And you're going, I don't even know what she just said.
Well, you know, we've been talking about the assault.
And we know you're going to say that.
Yeah. And we've been talking about
suction and drudge mining?
Yeah, we've been talking about the government.
I thought you said sucks and drudge.
Okay. No, okay. Suction. It's a good thing I don't have braces or any other appliances. Suction dredge mining.
Yeah, so the all-out assault on the timber industry came first, and then it was farming and agriculture. Mining's been taking a bullet right along.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about the other ones, but we've never talked about mining.
Well, the miners get forgotten because there are not a lot of people who have personal experience with mining.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just frankly, they're
right.
They live a lot of times remote. Hey, is Mike in there?
And I think our layman, I mean, people out there listening probably think about somebody with a gold pan going out and swishing around in the water trying to find a few flakes of gold. But this is kind of bigger than that.
And there's more to it.
But, you know, if you read Atlas Shrugged or watch the first portion of the movie that came out last spring, they deal with that issue a lot in the first third of Atlas.
Yeah, that's true.
Atlas Shrugged.
That's true. And there are quite a few people who know about mining that we could have had on, but Mike Adams has been on here before speaking about the monument and some other good stuff.
It appears that we lost him momentarily.
Okay, so forget about Mike. We're over Mike. I was wondering, I'm like, he's pretty chatty. Why didn't he say anything?
So
ladies and gentlemen, some things never change, so whether we record in the afternoon or on a Sunday morning.
We still lose our guests out there in Never Land. I mean, we cut people off on a regular basis. So it's that, and then what were we saying?
Sometimes
this show is good for pissing people off and scaring the you-know-whats out of them.
So somebody asked me today, you know, hey, what do you have to do this afternoon? And I said, I got to go, you know, talk crap about the government and, you know. There's so much, did we find Mike?
We did.
Oh, okay. I was going to say before we head back that direction, honestly, for people who are thinking, gosh, you know, there's just so much going on. What can I do? What can I do? You had better get together with a group of people in your area that are working on things. I don't care if it's a tea party group, a 9/12 group.
Yeah, and you know what? It doesn't have to just be a tea party group.
No.
There's a lot of coalitions out there. There are a lot of grassroots movements that are starting up that are fighting all the issues because they're coming from every direction. So there's always somebody you can team up with, and that's the quickest way to get involved.
And it's a numbers game. It isn't about expertise. It isn't about spending 24 hours a day together. It isn't about, you know.
Although some do.
Yeah, well, sometimes it happens.
It does.
But it's about numbers, because like Monday we had here in Redding,
in Shasta County,
we had a rally we needed to do for a landowner who's having trouble with the county. That was at 1 o'clock,
and then at 2 o'clock we had a meeting at the Board of Supervisors because we are suspicious that some of their department heads have absolutely nobody overseeing what they do,
and that affected that is in effect what came out of the rally at 1.
And then at 3 o'clock we had a meeting that involved the Forest Service and local recreation coalitions partnering up to stop this onslaught of closing all the public lands to the taxpayers. Every single one of those meetings was well attended by concerned citizens from different coalitions who cross over and work together. But every one of those meetings, which were all recognized in the newspaper, were a direct result of citizen input and citizen fire.
Exactly. So a lot of times, you know, the divide and conquer thing works both ways. Sometimes when people want folks not to show up, they'll schedule a meeting at the same time they think that they're all going to be doing something else. But, you know, 200 people at the rally up at Anselmo Vineyards and like 50 people at Board of Supervisors just an hour later. And then you said like 20 or 30 people in the other one. So, you know, depending on what size your community is, you may be able to turn out more more folks than that. But like yesterday, there was a meeting about wolves, bringing wolves into California. Just one more service the government provides. That was happening in Red Bluff, but the notice was fairly short. I just found out about it yesterday morning, and I found out about it while I was 4 hours north. 3 hours north, really, listening to a whole different thing about water. But somebody down there went. So we got a good report of what was going on. Somebody was able to weigh in for the landowners. And any more folks, if you live in town on a small piece of ground and you think, oh, all this private property stuff is kind of, you know, it's not really a problem that's going to come to my front door.
It's already in the neighborhoods. It really is.
It is.
Because what's happening is water is going to be the number one issue. I mean, I heard it said that recently that water is as valuable as oil. And there's water that runs through every neighborhood. I mean, it could be a culvert from a recent subdivision that's been built. It could be you might have half an acre of land and have a dry creek that just happens to be a part of your piece of property, and anything like that draws the attention of the water boards, the state water boards, the
Army Corps of Engineers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would be very, very surprised. The other thing is, too, I don't think anybody would be surprised at the idea that if part of your society loses their liberty, how long does it take before everybody loses it?
And never think that they'll never come for you. I mean, that's
naive.
Just
silly.
It's naive, and you're doing yourself a serious disservice to ever take that attitude that you're going to ignore what's happening to your neighbor, because as long as you keep your mouth shut, you're safe.
Yeah.
Not.
Or the bureaucracy won't find you. So it's just a matter of being involved in it, being, you know, weighing in. Yes, we have to have some rules. We don't advocate the overthrow of the government, although, you know, kind of attractive.
And given that that's one of the tenets of this show is limited government, not no government.
And people, you know, if we're in a representative republic, then people can't adequately represent us if we don't, for one, let them know what we think.
A coach needs a team.
Exactly, and those are our tax dollars at work. We should go be smart about how they're being spent. So should we take our little break early and then come back and do a long chat with Mike?
Well, we can certainly do that.
And we will. All right. So Bob's got all sorts of fun mining music for you, although we haven't talked mining yet. We're coming back and we're talking about mining. So grab a cup of coffee. You've got 2 minutes. Thank you very much to the advertisers who support KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Well, I was born to coal miner's daughter in a cabin on a hill in Butcher Holler.
Listen, we forgot to mention to find out all about today's guest and to find out everything about We the People Radio and a list of our archived shows from October of 2010.
Uh-huh.
Go to wethepeopleradio.us. Everything you need to know is right there.
Yeah, and if there's stuff that you'd still like to know that we haven't done yet, you should email us. Definitely email us and let us know. We take tons of requests. We like to hear from authors and mm-hmm. speakers. If you get emails from different groups or whatever and they're referencing material from somebody who sounds interesting, I would hope that you would let us know because we have the ability to get them on and hear the whole story. So, Mike Adams, are you in there?
I am here.
Oh, we've bridged the technical gap. That's so great.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk to us about the... Well, tell folks how you got involved in mining. Give them a little background for you.
My little background? Okay, well, let's see. I was a rock collector for years, and one of the specimens I didn't have was gold. And so one spring I decided I would go out and try to find a gold specimen to go in my rock collection. And that was about, somewhere around 2000. And so it got to be so much fun every spring when the weather would open up, and prior to my work starting for the year, I'd come down here to California and do some gold mining.
Because you lived in... Alaska?
I lived in Washington at the time, kind of. I was a gypsy running around. I lived in Washington with a Texas driver's license in my pocket.
Another rule breaker turns to mining.
No, and driving all over the country, working all over the country. But one year they sent me from the West Coast to the East Coast four times. Uh-huh. Back and forth. But at any rate, in about 2002, the economy kind of went into the toilet, and there was no work that year. And so rather than going off to work, I stayed and mined gold all year. And since then, I have been mining gold for a living. Up until 2 years ago when they shut me down.
And now when, got to always remember that we never know where people are, what people's experience is, but when you say mining for gold, I think people have seen the big, hydro mining, where they basically shoot water at a hillside and mine that way. There's the one guy in a little gold pan standing in the river.
And that's, I think, what most people think of.
A lot of folks think about that. But we're talking, at that time, were you involved in the suction dredge mining?
Yes, I was involved. I immediately got into, I started with a gold pan, and I found, yes, that you can find a little gold, but you're not going to find enough anymore to make a living at it, okay? The old days of going down to Two-Bit Gulch and panning enough gold to buy yourself dinner is long gone. And I happened to have fallen in with a group of guys who were suction dredge mining to start with. And since that is the most efficient way of recovering gold out of a river, that's what we were doing.
So, okay, describe for people what suction dredge mining looks like.
Okay. You have a set of pontoons or floats, and we have a sluice box, which is, it varies, but it has a set of riffles in it, and you run the sand and gravel across these riffles, and the gold settles out behind the riffles. The riffles create a little eddy current, and the gold drops out in that low pressure zone. You have an engine, typically, that draws clean water out of the river and runs it through a Venturi nozzle, and then a hose connected to that nozzle, and that hose goes off to a swivel nozzle when you suck gravel up off the bottom of the river, goes up the hose, and then across the sluice box, and then back into the river.
Okay.
Okay. Does that paint a picture?
Sure.
Yeah.
So how much water do you need, and about how much, if you were going to get started, I realize like anything else, it'd be like, I'm going to go be a mechanic.
Okay.
There's a basic set of tools you need, and then you can obviously go up from there. What's the investment like, and then
And then we also have to talk about the property, because you can't just buy all the equipment and then go to someplace that has water and then go mine.
No, that's very true. Let's argue this. It's very much like farming, okay? Just because you went to the store and bought a tractor and a plow doesn't mean you can start plowing any place you find. You have to own the property. In 1866, the Congress granted the right to locate minerals on federal ground. Now, there are a group of minerals that they listed. Gold was one of them, silver, lead, mercury. If you found these minerals on public ground, you could stake a claim and claim them as yours. Okay, now there was, this was extended to U.S. citizens and people who had declared their intent to become U.S. citizens. Okay, so now this act of, you had to discover it, you had to do the paperwork, et cetera, and then it's yours. Now, at that point in time, it's your private property. Okay, just as you didn't necessarily own the ground, but you owned the minerals that were in the ground. Okay, so this is a real private property. So, simply because you own a tractor doesn't mean you can come farm my ground. You have to do so only with permission.
That's a great example.
Okay. So there are clubs who have claims, who have bought up private property and will allow you to mine on their property for joining the club, or it varies from club to club as to what the restrictions are, but there are clubs that you could join, so you didn't have to go find your own.
Okay. So Mike, given the current political climate, are people able to keep their claims? I mean, I know that we've got the list of initiatives or bill proposals in front of us, but what's going to happen to people's claims? And are those claims carried from generation to generation?
Some of the claims are carried from generation to generation. They can be inherited, they can be bought, they can be sold. And there are some claims that are still held by families. Their grandfathers or great-grandfathers staked the claims, and they still hold them. There is a requirement in the law for the claim to be valid. There's what they call the Prudent Man Act or Prudent Man Rule. And it says that for a claim to be valid, that a prudent man must be able to earn a living from the claim.
Okay, so you can't have the claim as a hobby?
Well, you could.
Okay.
But so long as a prudent man could earn a living.
Okay.
Didn't say he has to. He just has to have the ability to. In other words, there has to be enough locatable mineral to support a man.
Interesting. And in your case, a man and a couple of dogs, but, you know, we're not going to nitpick that.
A man and a couple of dogs, yeah.
So in order for a prudent man to be able to make a living, I mean, if we're talking about a real business and income versus expense, would these proposed regulations kind of chip away at that prudent man's ability to make a living?
Well, actually, these regulations make it so I can't make a living.
Okay,
but yes, and let us argue that my claims were in an open area, all right? Yes, there's a couple pieces of legislation, AB 120, which put the five-year moratorium on it. It says a lot of things.
And that's the fee structure.
But one of the things it says is that this program must be entirely funded by the miners.
So the fewer miners that are able to participate in the program, that puts a bigger financial burden on the remaining miners.
Well, beyond that, they've said only 1,500 of you can participate in the program.
Now, is this...
Okay, now, every 5 years you have to do a new EIS.
Which is an environmental impact.
And it's the state that will do it. And we know how they like to spend money. So there's no constraint on their pocketbook. They'll spend as much as they need.
That's because it's ours.
And then we divide it, and then, of course, you've got to hire, they'll argue we have to hire dedicated wardens, I'm sure, and we'll have to buy them a truck, and we'll have to pay for the fuel, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And they have to go to special warden school.
The cost of this program is going to be so outrageous that nobody can afford to make a living at it. It will strictly be a rich man's hobby.
And that's kind of what's happening to everything. Now, real quickly, these regulations, are these state or federal?
These are state.
They are state, okay.
Let's not get into it, but there is an argument that the state does not have the right to regulate this. We believe that this is, many of us believe, that since it was the federal government that granted us these rights, it's the federal government that must regulate it. You know, that the state is an effective overriding a right, okay?
So if, let me see if I understand this correctly. In order to retain your claim, you must be able to be a prudent man that could make a living.
That makes the claim valid.
That makes the claim valid. So really, if you come full circle, if the government can regulate you out of the ability to make a living, therefore your claim becomes invalid.
That's right. Well, let's take my claims. Let us assume, okay, that they didn't close it. They put that as one of the listed closed waters. We'll probably touch on that a little later. But they made the restrictions so draconian, okay, that I can no longer mine them. Now, my claims were mined back in the 1800s by the first explorers that came into this country. They were mined again in the 1930s. They were mined again in the 1950s. And here we are in the 2000s mining again. In truth, we're picking up the scraps and crumbs of what others have left us. Okay? And we're still able to make a living. You know, albeit it's a skinny living, it's a living. But if they take away this method from me, now I can't make a living from my claims, and therefore I lose them.
So it's kind of a through the back door and around the corner kind of method for eliminating the claims.
In a way, yes. Except that they haven't done it through the back door. They've gone through the front door. They've said, this water is closed. You can't mine it.
And that was like two years ago?
Well, 2 years ago, there was a moratorium across the board. Totally across the board. There were allegations made that we were doing irreparable harm to the fish. And so it went to court, and the court ordered Fish and Game to do another environmental impact statement. Okay? Now, Fish and Game didn't have the money and didn't have the desire. So they drug their feet, and they said, oh, well, we don't have the money, so that's a good excuse. Then the court, you know, gave them a deadline. And since they were going to go past, they actually went past the deadline. That's when the legislature stepped in and said, look, if you're not going to do it, we're going to shut the whole thing down. But they're still under court order to do the EIS. Money was found. They started the program. But rather than showing that we did any harm, they just alleged that we did harm. And required an EIS. It's arguably a taking in having shut us off to begin with for these past 2 years. But
and when we come back, we need to take a quick break, but we need to tell folks EIS is an environmental impact statement in case you didn't know. And when we come Mike, we got to let folks know about how much that costs since I think of a statement like, hey, sit down and shut up. I mean, that's a statement. it should have been an environmental impact statement, slightly longer and more, I guess if I made that statement to someone I worked for, it would cost me probably as much as it would cost you to file your EIS. There may be some connection. I think we may have unraveled it. In the next 2 minutes, you guys can contemplate that. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
I'm a hard-working man. I wear a steel hard hat. I can ride rope, a hammer and paint, do things with my hands that most men can't.
It's Bob Martin here on today's edition of We the People. We are, in case you missed Aaron live at the top of the hour, we are replaying a show from 5 years ago yesterday. The late Mike Adams was our guest back on March 4th, 2012, and the topic is still very much current on mining. In fact, more current than we even realized. Aaron pointed out after we started the program that there was a reference early on in the show about the comment period with the California Water Board on the suction dredge mining being quote unquote tomorrow. Well, that was 5 years ago, but they're going after them again 5 years later, and the comment period this year with the California Water Board it actually is in fact later on this week, and Aaron will put details and links on that on the We the People website. So now we resume our We the People interview with Mike Adams on suction dredge mining and other things mining here on AM 1460 KCNR.
All the gold.
Our favorite song.
We love it.
California is in a bank in the middle of Beverly Hills in somebody else's name. So if you're dreaming about California, it don't matter at all.
I can't sing it without laughing.
Before California's a brand new game.
Hey, when you're last on the list of everything, it is a new game.
It is a new game. It's like, I don't like a bad game. It's like, hey, I know what it is. It's called Keep Away.
There
I remember
you
that
go.
Game.
I do too.
Yeah, remember that game?
Yeah.
I didn't like it then either.
Tetherball and Foursquare. Okay, back with Mike Adams.
Don't forget dodgeball.
Mike, were you singing? I didn't hear you singing.
If he was singing, he wouldn't have been able to hear us. How fun would that be?
The rule is if we play the All the Gold in California song, we have to sing along.
It's not in the bank in Beverly Hills. I have some over here in the creek.
Don't tell anybody. So you were going to tell us what the cost of an EIS is, and actually what an EIS is. And also, I think people need to understand that the reason
that we've got this show
on this particular Sunday is because there's an open comment period that ends soon.
That's correct. So an EIS is an environmental impact statement, okay? And this current one, I don't know exactly what the price tag is. I think they were granted something like, if I'm not mistaken, and I could be grossly mistaken, something like $1.2 million.
Holy Toledo.
That's a sit-down and shut-up right there.
Yeah. What an EIS does is it looks at all the available scientific studies and documents that relate to a particular activity, okay? It also takes into account public input, oftentimes hearsay evidence, and it looks at the general overall impact of a particular activity upon the environment or upon species, and makes a determination as to whether any harm's being done. Now, the final EIS is not out yet. We only have a draft EIS, and now we have, on the 17th of February, they released their proposed regulations. And then we have a comment period which closes on March 5th. this is just slightly over a two-week period, which I kind of question about the lack of input time. But there's a whole list of new regulations they're proposing, a whole list of stream closures. It goes on and on and on. And I, if you will, I'd like to read some of the comments that I'm making to the proposed regulations. Kosher?
Do it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Do we have enough information in the pipeline so far that it'll make sense for people?
I hope so.
Okay. Because we have time, so no panic.
Okay.
Off you go. Read away. Right.
My general statement starts off with this is, or excuse me, it is clear that these proposed regulations have been written with a complete disregard to federal and state constitutional protections. Furthermore, it illustrates your lack of even the most rudimentary grasp of mining law. It is a clear abuse of power and abridgment of the oath of office to uphold and defend the Constitution, state, and federal. It is a clear and prejudicial attempt to placate environmental interests that have to date failed to show any harm by the mining community. These proposed regulations are also an over-enforcement and misinterpretation of AB 120. AB 120 requires that, quote, new regulations fully mitigate all identified significant environmental impacts, end quote. The draft EIS has failed to identify any significant impact. Most of all, impacts were identified as de minimis or of little impact. Instead, you've chosen to regulate for might, may, could. This is not in keeping with the intent nor the spirit of the law. Now, we get into some of this stuff, for instance, the fact that they want to limit the number of participants to 1,500. My comment basically is when did we, the people, grant you the right to regulate what vocation we can work in or how many of us can work in that vocation? Yeah, you have to understand, to a lot of us, this is what we do for a living. And now the state has said, well, you know, we think we only should have 1,500 people that do this job. You know, what's next? They're going to limit the number of electricians or carpenters or auto mechanics? This is not within their power to regulate. And I believe that this is an unconstitutional taking under the First Amendment.
And before we...
We've got a report card that we have to have.
Okay.
And we've got, interestingly enough, it must be kept on our person at all times.
Oh, geez, you're kidding.
Well, okay. You know, I got no problems. I'll fill it out.
Here's what's going
to
happen.
And I'll keep it on my person. I work underwater.
There will come a day when everyone will have to have their papers on them.
That's right. This is a report card. And my question is are you going to use this for any kind of law enforcement? If you do, then you have made me incriminate myself, and that's an abridgment of my Fifth Amendment rights. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We're not saying. Sorry, we're claiming the Fifth. Tried to lure us in there. That was a trick question, wasn't it?
It was a trick question. They have decided that a four-inch nozzle is the maximum size without special permission. And here's the catch. You got to get an on-site inspection, and then you must comply with all the 1602 requirements.
Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, that's like bad music here. I read 16. I was reading the list of the requirements, and we should just let people know also on the WeThePeopleRadio.us page, we'll put some stuff on there. I found a video that shows suction dredge mining, and I sent it to Mike for his approval or for a better video,
mm-hmm.
so people can go on there and look and see what this actually looks like. And we'll also put this draft legislation. And Mike, if you're cool, that we'll put a copy of your letter on there as well.
Oh, absolutely.
To give people something to go from.
I'll send you the final here.
Okay.
Here's another little piece that they have in here. It says, no person shall remove or damage stream side vegetation during suction dredge operations. All right? So, by their standard, if I step on a blade of grass, I'm in violation of the regs.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Rafters aren't held to this. Isn't this unequal application of the law?
I mean, anybody that's near a stream bed is going to step on grass.
Yeah. And let's see.
Unless you spray it down with herbicide ahead of time, which is bad.
You can't have more than, you can only have one dredge for every 500 feet.
Oh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So, as we said, this is private property. So, I can't operate my dredge within five, if I operate up at the edge of my property, and the next owner wants to operate close to that same edge, who gets precedence?
Yeah.
Here's a conflict. You're saying we can't operate in the same, you know, in the same stretch of river.
You guys all meet down at the saloon in Happy Camp and duke it out like they did in the olden days. Draw straws, I guess. Man.
Well, here's an interesting one, too. Material may only be moved within the current water line. No boulders or other material may be moved outside the current water line.
Would that include minerals that you're mining for?
Well, that's other material, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much you can look around and you can touch it, but then you got to leave it there.
Well, that's kind of the point now.
Huh. That's sufficient.
An interesting point. You can claim a whole list of locatable minerals. On my claims, the claim owner that owns the claim upstream from me, his claim isn't claimed for gold. It's claimed for a rock, a gem-quality rock, called Antigorite Serpentine. It occurs in large boulders. Now, here they're saying, I can't remove a boulder. Well, that's what the claim is all about.
So, if we were to trace this back, follow the money, who's behind this?
The original complaint comes from the Department of Natural Resources of the Karuk Tribe.
The Karuk Tribe?
The Karuk Tribe.
Now, didn't I read somewhere today that somebody involved in administration of that tribe was found to have embezzled $900,000 that was supposed to be used?
Those were environmental scientists, and they ripped off the Yuroks.
Yeah. Oh, it's the Yuroks. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. And it was supposed to be used for studying the spotted owl?
We got to keep our circular firing squads in order.
Well, the circular firing squad, the Karuk tribe has been investigated by the FBI on multiple occasions for mismanagement of not only federal funds but grant funds. It's alleged that they have large bank accounts in offshore banks, okay? They are funded with millions of dollars every year, and yet most of the people don't see it. Okay, and there again, we have the equal access to justice law that says they can sue us and that we have to reimburse them. Okay? So, no, it's the original complaint came from the Karuk tribe. They're the ones that alleged they were killing fish. But they've yet to come up with a dead fish, you know. Also, as an interesting note, that when they proposed listing of the coho salmon, the dredge regulations were inspected at that point in time, and multiple scientists were asked, does suction dredge mining pose a hazard to these newly listed fish? And 201, they said no, that given the seasonal restrictions and certain closures at times of certain spawning areas, we pose no threat to the coho salmon, and yet that seems to be the thing that they say we're killing.
Lovely. Hey, Mike, we're going to take a really swift break, and when we come back, we need to let folks know about the mercury, because that's a biggie. That's one that they are always throwing out there that kind of people go, oh, yeah, that's a bad thing. We better cut them off. There, you know, anything that people would hear that really just a little bit of information would dispel the myth, we've got to make sure we hit those, and that was on my list of things to do. So we are coming back with Mike Adams. We're talking about suction dredge mining, and basically we're talking about property rights. So we hope you will rejoin us here at WeThePeopleRadio.us. You are listening to KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
In a cavern down by canyon, excavating for a mine, there lived a miner from North Carolina and his daughter, Chubby Clementine.
She got the gold mine,
she got the gold mine.
They split it right down the middle, and then they give her the better half. Well, it all sounds sort of funny, but it hurts too much to laugh. She got the gold mine, I got the share.
You gotta love Ray Stevens.
Actually, that's Jerry Reed.
Jerry Reed, okay. They kind of sound alike.
Don't tell Jerry Reed that.
I won't.
Don't tell Jerry Reed fans
I love that
either.
Song. That's so classic.
That is pretty funny.
Mining, divorce.
Mike doesn't know anything about that, though.
Well, I am getting the shaft, so I...
But see, the thing is, you're getting the shaft, but you're not getting a divorce from the government. See, you're getting the shaft twice.
It's going to go on?
Yeah, it's going to just keep going.
They're not letting you claim irreconcilable differences.
And I would like...
Maybe it'll work out and they'll move to Texas.
How about I withdraw my consent to be governed?
There you go.
Maybe we have to move to Texas. The music always gets us so distracted. Talk to us about mercury, Mike. Somebody focus on the topic.
Did you know it's a good thing, or they wouldn't put it in our light bulbs?
And we wouldn't need to wear hazmat suits to take care of those. Yeah.
Well, you know, years ago, the 1800s, the miners used copious amounts of mercury to try to recover the gold.
Why?
Well, because mercury has an affinity for gold.
Ooh.
It also has an affinity for copper.
Oh. So it's like a magnetic kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just attractive.
That's neat.
We don't know why, but it happens.
Did not know that. I mean, about the mercury.
We're talking about the birds and the bees now. Now we've moved over into a different topic with other regulations. We better stick to gold mining.
Okay, I was going to use a different
what he thinks about contraception.
Money and women, but that's, you know.
Bob's trying to veer us off into contraception. Bob. I got to watch him every minute.
Lots of mercury, okay? They didn't realize that it was hazardous or toxic substance. But so, it as a result, a lot of mercury ended up in the environment, in the rivers and whatnot. And probably where this is going to lead to is the Department of Water Quality.
Oh, no.
And I talked to the guy who initiated this study. And he said it really came out as a kind of an interesting question. They said, well, how much mercury do dredges recover? And so they talked to a dredge manufacturer, and he said, oh, well, we recover 100%. And they said, well, how do you know that? Have you ever tested it? And the manufacturer admitted, no, he never tested it, but it just had to be. So Department of Water Quality just couldn't leave things well enough alone, and they contacted BLM and had their inspection dredge come and do a study in a known mercury hotspot. Okay? Now, this is a place where you stick your head in the water and you can see the mercury dancing around on the bedrock. Okay? This is This is an area that is heavily contaminated with mercury. I mean, extremely heavily contaminated with mercury. And so they had the BLM dredge come in. Now, you have to understand that this particular dredge did what we call assessment work, where they checked, remember the prudent man rule about a prudent man must be able to make a living off of a claim. When they want to disprove a claim, they brought this particular dredge in, did some assessment work to decide whether a man could make a living off the claim. And we had a lot of people claiming up pieces of ground that don't hold any gold. But at any rate, so this dredge came in, and it's improperly set up and has had complaints about its recovery percentages complained all along. They improperly set up the dredge, and they did an experiment. And what they came up with is this improperly set up dredge recovered 98% of the mercury.
Wow.
The problem lies is that last 2% that it lost is considered, it was over the threshold limit for hazardous waste. Okay? It's not good that we take out 90%. It's bad that we lose 2%. You know, so this is what we're being judged by. The 2% it lost, even though it was not properly set up, you know, any gold miner who knows what he's talking about, will tell you, we don't recover all the gold and we don't recover all the mercury. But 98% is a pretty good percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Yeah, it's like the one fish that got away.
This is a hot spot. It's just really loaded with mercury. And so they have decided to take this one hot spot and apply that statistic over the whole system. I don't see how that's fair.
Yeah, no kidding.
So there is the first hitch in the giddy up.
Okay, well, that explains why, because I had heard before that in the upstream, there was more mercury content than downstream from suction dredge mining, but that they were mining operations, but they were talking about closing down the operations because it was stirring up the mercury. And I was thinking, what are they talking about? So that actually makes sense. But
now,
I can't.
We need to look at another conclusion it drew that is false.
Okay.
They spoke about the methylization of mercury. Mercury comes in many forms, okay? Mercury comes in a mercury oxide. It's called cinnabar, which is raw form of mercury. And it's just a pretty red rock, okay? It comes in a free form of pure mercury. It comes in a form of mercury oxide, which is, I don't know if you'll admit that you played with mercury as kids and covered pennies.
Did it.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And the mercury oxide is that funny scum that floats on top of the mercury.
Okay.
And then there's a thing called methyl mercury. And methyl mercury is formed by anoxic, in other words, without oxygen, anoxic bacteria action. Okay? And when in an oxygen-deprived environment, when this bacteria attacks the mercury, it forms it into methyl mercury, and methyl mercury is extremely toxic. It's the mercury that fish pick up and concentrate in their flesh. Same thing for humans, okay? So it is an extremely bad form of mercury, but it forms where there's no oxygen, like on the bedrock underneath tons of sediment. It doesn't form in an oxygen-rich environment, like on the top, after you suck it up with the dredge.
Mm.
Okay, so the other thing they were talking about, that particular dredge was of a design we call a header box or crash box. which is not used much anymore, but it would be particularly prone to taking large globs of mercury and breaking it into very fine flour, okay? That's not the common form of dredge. So they have drawn some conclusions here that it is better to leave 100% of the mercury on the bottom of the river where it can turn to methyl mercury, rather than remove 98% of it, okay, and take it out of the environment, and the other 2%, well, you're right, it's going to get transported. It's going to get transported on my 6-inch dredge, that would be about 30 feet downstream.
Hmm.
Okay? We're not talking about kicking it up and floating it down, you know, from the High Sierras all the way down to the Delta.
Yeah, it's
We're
not going
to
start flying out of.
Feet.
Yeah, it's not going to start flying out of people's faucets. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Time for the news. 5 minutes of news, folks. You can catch up with what's happening currently. We'll be right back with you.
More of We the People straight ahead this Sunday morning here on KCNR Shasta Readings.
Two of We the People Radio, I would tell you to call in, but then that wouldn't work because we're not here. This is a pre-recorded show, but you can find out everything about today's guests and all of our archive shows on WeThePeopleRadio.us. And, you know, we were talking about all the things that we do on our five-minute break.
Yeah, well, I was going to tell people, too.
They both start with P.
That's it. Liz was eating peanuts, and she was in the restroom, although that starts with R.
We have really strange conversations when you folks are not listening.
I have to start this segment over.
We already did that once, Bob.
Yes, we did. Yeah. By the way, you two are not here on Sunday morning, but I am.
Sorry.
So I'm,
we're lying. Call in and harass Bob. Then chat with them at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Yes, I'm lonely in the chat room, so chat with me at KCNR1460.com, and let me know what you think of Aaron and Elizabeth's performance this morning.
So tell me jammed up. I'll be in San Diego, and Elizabeth will be taking care of my dogs.
Yeah.
So they won't be here, so you can be honest with me.
Yeah, you can level with Bob.
I'll be chasing her dogs around my property.
Around your house. Yeah, so that song, that incoming song, just in case people are like, what is that anyway? Yeah, that's a little excerpt from Redneck Friend by Jackson Browne. And we did that a couple of years ago just for fun when we got started. We're stuck with it. And I don't know, sometimes I think it'd be fun to change it, but if you get any brilliant ideas, why don't you guys let us know? Let Bob know on the chat, since Bob's in charge of the music, so you guys feel free to jump in there and let him know.
Taking suggestions for new theme music for We the People, okay.
Exactly. You just never know. You never know what it'll be. Maybe we should just change it every week and not have theme music. That'd be fun, too. Bob's like, no, that's a lot of work. Don't do that. All right, so we're here with Mike Adams.
For me, it's just one more song.
Kind of sound like a bartender there, Bob. There's some similarities.
Yeah, just, I kind of feel just, like a bartender some mornings.
Just pour another drink.
Just one more song.
Or loading us up with coffee so we can get home safely.
There you go.
Mike got another shot of whiskey while we were on the break.
Good thinking, Mike. There you.
Yeah.
Since you're at home and everything.
Yeah.
So Mike is talking to us about suction dredge mining, something that is often maligned and very little known about it.
And there will be a video on the website at WeThePeopleRadio.us that will allow you to see that firsthand so that you don't have to envision what it looks like in your mind.
Yeah, since we described it last hour, but as we were doing that, I'm thinking, you know, there's probably a video of this stuff out there. Kind of looks like vacuuming. It sort of looks a little bit like vacuuming under the water. A little bit.
Very much so.
And the new, so a couple of years, you guys were going on about your business. You own a mining claim, which is a section of ground that has water on it, or section of water that has ground under it. I'm not sure which. Do you own the ground on the sides?
Ground that has water running over it, yeah.
Okay. And you guys were, going along fat, dumb, and happy, you know, slurping things off the bottom of the river, and some of it good, some of it not. And then they decided to put a moratorium on suction dredge mining for like 5 years, right?
Well, initially it was just until they got the new EIS done. And then before they got that done, they put a 5-year moratorium on it, unless certain conditions were met.
Okay.
So.
And then, and now, and so what's happening now is an outgrowth of that or a continuation of that?
Basically a continuation.
Okay.
The part of the requirement to put the program back into effect.
To allow you to continue to work your property.
They had to come up with new regulations that addressed all the issues as it would be. But before we go on, I want to address mercury a little bit more. I don't want people to think that I'm cavalier with the subject. Mercury is a very...
Yeah, that's our job. Don't try to horn in on our job.
All right.
We're the cavalier ones.
It is an issue. But we no longer, as miners, we no longer use mercury in the open environment, okay? Now, and there are, when we do suck up mercury, we try to dispose of it in a proper manner. It has value, and we can sell it. Now, the state of Washington recognized the mercury problem they had, and they have mercury collection stations. Okay, they have told their miners, bring us your mercury, we'll dispose of it properly. But the state of California has said, oh God, it's a hazardous substance, it may cause cancer in the state of California, we can't touch it.
Mm.
So they have, rather than being proactive, they have been extremely reactive. And but the argument that we introduce mercury into the system is a lie. I know of no miner that introduces mercury into the system anymore. We remove it. And if you hear the fact that there's mercury coming off our sluices, it's because it was in the river to start with, and we removed 98% of what we found.
Well,
it's...
And then
that deserves an attaboy, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And just so that people can be clear about that, do we have this? Will we have this information on the website by the time people are actually listening to this? Are we gonna? Can we direct them there to learn about all that?
Yeah, I'll send you the link to the water qualities. Their study.
Okay.
And their study's been blown out of. Been holes blown all through it, but we can at least examine their initial study there.
Okay.
But okay, I'm ready for the next question.
Oh, I know. We have spoken quite a bit, but not for a while actually. But we've spoken quite a bit about the 1602 permits required by Fish and Game for substantial alteration of the stream bed.
Yes.
And so this is going to affect you guys now. So explain to folks maybe how that magical mystery tour is coming along.
Well, let's do it this way.
Okay.
The state I don't even know what it is, so I'm doing or at least the fishing game, does not know what significant means. Okay? It's not in their vocabulary. They see it, they omit it.
Okay.
You know,
and
are it's they, just a word they don't recognize, and so they skip over it.
And did they define what significant means?
No.
Yeah, they
There's
never
no
do.
No definition, per se, of what significant really is as far as the law is concerned.
Okay.
But their 1600 regulations say you must get a 1600 permit whenever you significantly alter a stream bed. Okay. So the word significant then becomes, is open for interpretation of the viewer.
Once we go on the program.
It's not if you remove five big boulders versus two. It's not if you move it 3 feet versus one.
Or if the boulder is like 10 centimeters.
You know.
That's pretty common with all of these environmental agencies. If you read any of their regulations, whether it be in the timber industry or whatever, they they basically broad brush their regulations and they leave everything wide open to interpretation. So if you try to pin them down on a definition of how much, how often, when, where, and why, you can't do it.
Well, and let's do it this way. That's a problem when you get overzealous agencies.
But that never happens, Mike. So that's not something we got to worry about.
No, not in this day and age.
Hey, never mind. Sorry, complete your thought there.
Okay, but I believe there needs to be wiggle room in the law, that we need to look at the intent rather than the letter. Okay, what were you intending to prevent or to control versus we can control everything and we can prevent everything?
Right.
You know.
Yeah, because we live in a perfect world and now we're going to make that happen.
Yeah. We're going to make it more perfect than what it was.
And we know it's not nice to fool Mother Nature, because I learned that as a kid. Okay, let's take a really swift break, and when we come back, we have a caller on the line, and so we're going to ratchet the discussion up. How's that? All righty, you're listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460.
On those tires on the railroad tracks, 34 more, it's almost time. See my baby walking out of that coal mine, covered with dust, T-shirt tied.
I keep straining my ears to hear a sound. Maybe someone is digging underground. Or have they given up and all gone home to bed? Thinking those who once existed must be dead. Have you seen my wife, Mr. Jones?
On the outside.
Yes, that was a rather depressing Bee Gees track from the 60s.
That's the Bee Gees?
New York mining disaster, 1941. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, one of their early hits.
Didn't even sound like them.
All right, Bob, you're going to get the Obscure Music Award.
So we have our own California State Senator Doug LaMalfa on the line, who wanted to weigh in on this topic. Are you there, Senator?
I'm here. How are you doing?
Good. Are you on the road or in the office?
Yes.
On the road, got a lot of ground to cover.
Great. Well, thanks for calling in.
Okay. Sure. So we're talking about mining and regulation and stuff like that. So we didn't think you'd have anything to say about it, but, you know, we thought we'd just check in case.
Well, the two sure seem to go hand in hand, don't they? The more mining, the more regulation. Actually, the less mining, because California regulators seem to believe all that nasty, dirty stuff should happen somewhere else, but we should still receive the products. So it's a constant assault again on the people that produce things in state by at some level maybe well intentioned, but I don't really think so. Well intentioned regulators. So
were you in on all that suction dredge discussion when that happened a couple of years ago?
Right. We had legislation that came before my committee to reverse that outright ban on suction dredging, because there was a pending fish and game report that was to be done on, you know, a study on that to see what are the effects, positive or negative, on suction dredge mining. And, you know, a great case can be made that during that process you're removing certain types of heavy metals and things that can be sifted and removed from the stream, as well as moving the stream around in a fashion that actually makes a better spawning bed for the fish that are there. But that all goes out the window because it's an emotional response by the legislature to pass a bill and say none at all.
And so when they have these discussions, how many of the people that are involved in that actually represent districts that even have people who do mining?
The same ratios you have legislators north of Sacramento.
Not much.
Well, we can count those on a couple of fingers.
Yeah, you just pretty much 1.5 hands there all the way across.
Well, and isn't that a pretty typical scenario of our state legislature, since the majority of the population of this state are centered in metropolitan areas, and we have people making decisions that will not impact their own constituents, but will greatly impact the constituents in areas that they don't represent?
Of issues they haven't even seen or experienced before, yes. So it's the constant battle that I have to argue that, well, all right, you might be making a policy that is intended or fits an urban area, but it isn't a one-size-fits-all because it has a completely different effect on rural California. So I'm always trying to work to carve out our areas or have it be, you know, at least a policy done differently on any given bill so that, you know, with our areas of geography and terrain and distance and less density of population, that the effects of whatever, whether it's health or whether it's resources, they're all different.
What can people who are listening to this, whether they live in Northern California and are, you know, in the Senate district that's being affected or the Assembly district or whatever, people that are hearing about this, what's something that actually they could do to influence their legislators? Because I know there are people down in the Contra Costa area that are very much involved in mining, and I know that their representatives were involved in the other side of this. What's the recommendation? I mean, what counts?
Well, those urban legislators need to hear from their constituents, but what works out is that there's such a small minority even in that area that their legislator is, in many cases, likely to ignore their pleas because they're more concerned about having a 100% voter, legislator rating from Sierra Club or Planning and Conservation League, things like that. And if it isn't 100%, they're scared. So the constituents have to make themselves heard, but they probably are a minority, a very, very small minority in that Bay Area urban electorate there. So it's really sad because they believe they're legitimate too, but the politics become so extreme in the densely populated areas, then you have a harder time getting traction. But that said, you always have to make your voice heard and never just give up.
And Senator, on that note, you know, we have in this area a very large, multifaceted, dedicated group of folks that attend public meetings, and they do belong to different coalitions, but they cross over a lot. And outside of writing a letter or sending a fax or making a phone call, how do you feel about people attending the public meetings?
The more the better, because when people stay home, then government moves on its own, and it moves in a direction of whatever that majority is, and right now, what the majority in California does is pretty scary to me. Well, just a recent example here this week is that, you may have heard about this, a Department of Fish and Game, one of their commissioners went on a hunting trip to Idaho, where he legally took, as per the laws of the state of Idaho, a mountain lion. And so he made the mistake of letting California legislators find out about that. And so now there's this uproar and all this hand-wringing over he should be removed as a fish and game commissioner because he defied the voters of California somehow in their interpretation by legally taking a mountain lion.
In Idaho.
Well, he was in another state.
So just get on the Internet, check that out. I helped start a letter in support of his position and his right to do things in other states that this state doesn't necessarily allow. And so, I mean, heck, in Texas, you're allowed to drive 85 miles an hour. So if you do that while you're in Texas, does that disqualify you from driving in California? That's the way the state legislature is. So you were talking earlier in the program about, what's the intent of legislation or what's the focus? And the California state legislature believes it can reach across state lines and exert its will on other states. And even there's been areas when I've been here where they're trying to dictate to other countries what their trade policy should be with us on you know, the way they make their products or the way they use, you know, labor to make their products and all this. So it's just amazingly arrogant how this place operates.
I think the guy should apply for the Vegas exemption. You know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Well, yeah, you shouldn't let anybody know what you're doing around here, because you got...
Yeah, pretty much. If you go shoot anything somewhere else, don't tell anyone. That's just stupid. Again, just absolutely silly. Hey, so Mike, are you still up there in?
Oh, absolutely.
In the land of snow.
To the senator very, very carefully.
All right. So you have any questions? You kids on the phone, you talk to each other.
Says mother.
That's true,
well,
right?
I've got kind of a question for the senator. Since they've closed 98% of the streams and creeks in Siskiyou County, and therefore effectively closed 98% of the mining claims, and that is a taking underneath the Fifth Amendment of the Federal Constitution, but also Article 1, Section 19 of the California Constitution. How is California going to compensate us for this taking? They don't have any money.
It intends not to. It's just the force of law. The legislature makes the law, and it feels like that's the end of the discussion. So the hard part is that the people that have had this taking against them have to now rally together and sue back the state for the illegal taking. They're either suing that the law itself is unconstitutional or that the compensation for what could be deemed as almost an eminent domain thing, that no compensation has been given for what had been a legal activity and one that hasn't been scientifically proven to be some kind of environmental problem. You know, again, the report, the study by Fish and Game wasn't even allowed to enter into the emotional response of a piece of legislation that was done. And, you know, when you see emotional responses, you know, that's followed up by what we're just talking about, this mountain lion thing in Idaho. Well, so,
absolutely. And there's another point to this, too, is that these proposed regulations are so full of constitutional takings that I got to questioning as to whether the man who was writing them and authoring them and or overseeing the program took an oath of office, and it turns out every state employee takes an oath of allegiance to defend not only the federal but the state constitution. I question how a state employee could infringe upon constitutional rights and still remain a state employee. And I can understand them not understanding it, but surely if they had a question as to whether it was an abridgment of a constitutional right, they should send it to the AG for clarification.
They don't ask that question, okay? The deal is to accomplish the agenda, and in most cases, these departments have been overrun by people that are of the environmental movement. It is no longer civil service. It's more of an opportunity. And, you know, again, those of us who like to work in the private sector, we don't really want government jobs, right? The people that do want them are the ones that have to want to advance this agenda at all levels. That's environmental, for some of these people in the state regulatory agencies, and the ones that are more on the legal side. They're driven by what many of the trial attorneys are after, is to generate more business for that end of it. So it's a neat little system they got going here, but it sure leaves the productive, honest taxpaying citizen out of that loop, because we're all having to try to figure out how to deal with it as landowners, farmers, ranchers, miners, what have you.
So since they've broken their oath of office, we shouldn't trust anything they say, is what you're basically saying.
I think they took the oath the same as they would, saying hi to the security guard on the way in the door. You know, it's just if they sat and listened to those, what they were just agreeing to uphold the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of California, and really adhere to that, they'd have a lot more heartburn over enforcing or or writing legislation that their legislative boss is asking them to do. But there isn't that conscience there, and we need a lot more of that in government, and more so by people out there that pay attention to this and driving their legislators to adhere to it or be afraid not to.
Well, I hate to tell you that I really don't want to spend the people's money the way I'm going to spend it. I have every intention of redressing my wrongs, which means I'm going to spend a lot of the state of California's money and try to put it in my pocket.
Well, you have to. You have to. If they make this legislation, if they do a taking, and if the people of the state vote for people that carry out this type of agenda, this type of policy, then the people of California need to pay for it. So whether we're talking eminent domain takings, whether we're talking one like this here, if it's such a great thing, then they need to factor in the full price of what that is going to cost them when they vote for the people or vote for the policy that does it. If they like it so well, then they better not complain about getting the bill for it. So I hope you do exercise that right to go after and get fully compensated. You know, the state, in another similar type of situation, when they didn't uphold their duty to protect the levee via flood control in a situation in down Yuba County because they hemmed and hawed and waited for studies and didn't want to disturb the elderberry beetle, they ended up costing the state $450 million in a lawsuit for the damages and for three people that died in a flood down there in Yuba City, you know, several years ago.
Wow.
And so go ahead, you know, sue them and soak the state for it, because it deserves to be punished that way, and the people deserve to be compensated. You don't ever compensate a lost life, obviously. So, you know, the policies that Californians seem to enjoy, they need to pay the price for until they decide to wake up to it and say, hey, I don't like this, and vote different people into office that don't foist that upon them.
And I hate to say it, but there does have to be a price to the citizens for not staying involved. I mean, nobody ever said freedom was free.
Well, we've got to tell everybody.
Yeah.
Yet again, the answer is tell everybody. Okay, so...
Well, if you're enjoying this $4.50, soon-to-be $5 gasoline, then go ahead and re-elect Obama and that lack of energy policy they have back there. But if you're getting tired of it, then do something different.
Hey,
say, oh, big evil oil companies, this and that. It isn't all that. It's the world market price for oil, most of which is coming from foreign countries that they set the price, not us. I mean, for example, I was just briefed in the legislature about the fact that oil can be had in North Dakota for $70 a barrel, but since they don't have the delivery system to get all of it that they have a glut of it up there, and there's not enough pipelines, there's not enough trucks and trailers to move that oil, so the price of the oils too is actually lower than the rest of the oil in the world because of the inability to move it. And so you could have $70 oil from North Dakota instead of $110, 115, whatever it is right now, more on the world market for a barrel of oil. Why is that way? Because we don't have the infrastructure to move it. Why? Because we have barriers to the Keystone Pipeline or other pipelines or other infrastructure, because the environmentalists control the White House and a bunch of the state legislatures. So enjoy this $5 fuel and the people that make that policy, or do something about it and elect different people.
And it's not just the cost of putting gas in your gas tank. It's the cost of everything that follows. The cost of food. The cost of food will go up. Everything will, because everything is trucked in.
But see, then I was listening to MSNBC on my way back from
Traitor
Wairika the other day on XM really? Radio, and they said actually, you know, that having the Keystone Pipeline and producing more oil here has nothing to do with the price of gas, so I guess it all depends on who you believe.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then, yeah, sure.
In imaginary land, that's all true.
Well, I heard Obama was trying to sell the reason that the cost of gas is going up is because the economy's doing better. We should be happy.
What is school awesome. Of economics did that man go to?
I think he flunked economics 101.
I'm going to jump back on MSNBC and see what they say about that.
I bet he flunked basic math.
We've got to take a quick break. We're going to be back with everybody. We got everybody in here. This is a big group think. You are listening to the big group think here at WeThePeopleRadio.us. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
chunk of coal.
Little chunk of coal.
But I'm gonna be a diamond someday. I'm gonna grow and glow till I'm so blue, pure, perfect. I'm gonna put a smile on everybody's face.
Welcome back to Comedy Relief Central with Aaron, Elizabeth, and Bob, and our guests. Senator Doug LaMalfa and somebody else who has been lost.
Who is a disconnected.
So we can deliver a bad message like nobody's business.
Okay.
Okay.
Who did we lose?
Hold on. It's Engineer Bob, cutting in from the future here. What we learned at this point was that Senator Doug LaMalfa had to leave our broadcast due to a prior commitment, and we inadvertently lost the connection with Mike Adams. Unfortunately, when we got Mike Adams back on the line, we momentarily lost recording capability for the first portion of this segment, so we called on our crack team of audio experts in a desperate attempt to recover Mike's lost audio.
No, 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 go past this. Pass this part. In fact, never play this again. Try it here.
Stop.
When does this happen?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened to then?
We passed then.
When?
Just now. We're at now now.
Go back to then.
When?
Now.
Now?
Now.
I can't.
Why?
We missed it.
When?
Just now.
When will then be now?
Soon.
How soon?
Well, as you can hear, they were relatively successful, so we're pleased to rejoin our conversation with Mike Adams in progress now on We the People.
Well, it's because we didn't really harm that much back then, and we're not harming it now.
Well, and that's really...
I just want you to come down to my claim and tell me where I mined last year.
And that's really the same sentiment that people share when they see the Scott Valley for the first time.
Yeah, they're like, this is this devastated area that needs to be restored.
It's absolutely one of the most breathtakingly beautiful areas I've ever been through.
Well, and Mike, so people a lot of times when they think about mining, they think about everything being taken out of the river. But in the suction dredge mining, you guys aren't leaving a giant cavity. You're...
Well, a lot of these rivers are so compacted that the fish cannot, you know, they only have flesh and blood to dig a hole which to lay their eggs. And when the stuff is so cemented together that they can't dig a hole, then they don't really have a place to spawn to lay their eggs, except on the surface, in which case they really get washed away. We produce very loose, clean gravel, which they prefer.
It's easier on their lips to dig down into it, huh?
Wait, really?
Don't they dig with their lips?
No.
What do they dig with?
They dig with...
They don't have hands.
Dig with their bellies and their fins.
Bellies and fins. What about the lips? You see them do that in goldfish bowls.
Oh, they're sucking up algae. They're eating.
Apparently, I have a tremendous knowledge about fish. I know you can buy coho salmon at Costco, and therein lies...
So if you do like dead
coho,
just go to Costco.
Okay, so the fish have to wiggle around on their stomach. That's how they dig the little holes that they put their eggs in.
Yeah, well, I'm waiting.
This has never cared.
I'm waiting for Costco to carry spotted owl. I am just like chicken.
And you know, Bill, every time we go there, Bill looks for the baby seal oil and the tiger meat, but you know. They don't have that either. Only coho salmon endangered species. It's really kind of weird. Kind of prejudice.
Is that discrimination?
It is.
I think it is.
I think we need to look into that.
People are like, I think you idiots need to stay on track. Rabbit trailing. So you guys change. Talk to me about mining claim size. You know, because now you've got ground that's got water on it, but is it like, is it like anything else? I mean, you could have 50 feet, or you could have a square mile, or you could have, how much ground do you have?
All right.
What's a normal?
A typical claim can be up to 20 acres.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Per person.
Is it long and skinny and follows the water? I mean, or is it a big square and you have some ground too?
No, you include the ground around it.
All right.
Okay, you can't skinny. It's a quarter of a quarter of a quarter, I guess, is what the size is. So,
all right.
you can break it up to a certain size, but then you have to put the blocks together. But 20 acres per person. Now, you can go in an association claim and make one big claim where, you and your wife have 40-acre claim, okay, or your wife and your two kids now have an 80-acre claim. Okay, that's doable. But otherwise, what you do is you have several claims. And by the way, we do pay a maintenance fee or have to do an assessment work on the claim. We have to do work on it every year or pay a fee in lieu of work. So there has to be a continuous, let's say a continuous use of some sort or another.
And you pay property taxes on this, so you contribute to the general welfare of your county,
to the tax base.
Yeah, and I've been fighting about that since I can't use it. What's it good for?
Mm-hmm. That was my next question. You still have to pay property tax on property you can't use.
Okay, now I have
I
have a wild strain before we go to break, and I'm probably going to sneak out. But
in that order?
Yeah, actually, in that order. obviously, we owe a great deal to the Chinese government, and I do know that. Just outside of Boise, Idaho, the Idaho governor has been negotiating with the Chinese government to buy a tremendous piece of land just outside of the Boise city limits. And I'm just kind of wondering if, you know, somewhere along the line, if our government can regulate Americans off of their land, if that would not then become valuable because of the minerals found in payment and repayment of our debt to the Chinese government.
Well, let's do it this way. It has been suggested by one of my friends that the reason they want us off the ground, okay, is because we are an encumbrance on the title. Okay, I have a claim, and therefore I am an encumbrance on the title.
Mm-hmm.
And they cannot transfer the land to another owner, i.e. China, without clearing my encumbrance.
How convenient.
But if they could make it worthless to you and you just walk away and give up on it.
Exactly.
Which,
exactly.
You know, if the land is worthless and you're still paying property taxes, walking away from it, at least you could eliminate that debt to yourself.
Well, yeah. You know? This is an interesting point too. This is gonna cost the counties, and I'm not just Siskiyou County, Sierra County, as an example. It's gonna cost them a lot of money and lost property taxes.
Yep.
You know, when people walk away from this and it falls back to federal title, then they can't charge me tax on it.
Ridiculous. All right, we've got to take a really swift break here, and when we come back, you're going to find out what miners and bankers have in common. There is a connection. You're listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
With all of his strength, he gave a mighty shove. Then a miner yelled out, "There's a light up above." And 20 men scrambled from a would-be grave. And now there's only one left down there to save, Big John. With Jackson timbers, they started back down. Then came that rumble way down in the ground. And the smoke and gas belched out of that mine. Everybody knew it was the end of the line for Big John.
Jimmy Dean.
That's a good one. I like that. Welcome back to We the People Radio. We have been talking about mining and goofing off, actually. You've been doing both probably equally well. You are in the last 10 minutes of our show here with Mike Adams, who lives up in Siskiyou County, and he is a suction dredge miner and has been impacted a lot in the last few years with all these different regulations, and many of them are based on kind of fictional problems and or poor science, or both.
Before we cut out on our last segment, I said that bankers and miners had something in common. And so, Mike, you've had a little time now to think about it. You know what it is?
Well, the ounce and three quarters that I'm holding in my hand right now.
No, it's better than that. It's
easy. What's in the bank in Beverly Hills?
Hey, don't make me sing about that again. Elizabeth's gone. I'm going to have to do it alone. You know, it's not good solo time. No, it's the last part of this regulation. The timing of activity is going to be regulated. Active suction dredge operations may only be conducted.
Oh, I'm sorry. I completely missed that. I was thinking I was a fish and game employee.
Oh, I sandbagged you. They may only be conducted between 10 and 4. Okay, so if you're not a banker, why would you only be able to mine between 10 and 4? What's up with that?
The only thing I can think of is they want a fish and game official standing on our shoulders when we go to work.
Ooh.
Ooh.
That's interesting. So you guys will have to sit around. You'll be like, you know, it'll be like actually working in a coal mine that we've been playing music from. You know, it'll be like the whistle blows and then you start work, and then the whistle blows, and you quit?
Well, it may come to that. I don't know, you know.
What possible good could this do? I mean, honestly, why would it be?
Typically, my partner would dive for 2 hours, I would dive for 2 hours, and then he would dive for another 2 hours, and we'd alternate. So we were underwater for 6 hours, but in between, you have to refuel the dredge and see if you got any gold in the box and whatnot. So our hours were 8 to 10 hours a day. What? I don't know. When four-hour work week I can understand, but a six-hour work day?
Yeah. So in people's, you've listed all these things in your comments, and so, you know, people could utilize that actually to weigh in on this issue. And you don't have to be a suction dredge miner, obviously, in order to weigh in on the issue. Because, again, it's more regulation, kind of more nonsense. And for those people that are thinking they still don't see the connection to them, by the way, if it's a regulation, it's enforced with your tax dollars. So it's going to cost all of us money. So,
absolutely.
Talk to me about the number of people who mine, like up where you are. I mean, what are people doing in the meantime now that they're not able to work?
Well, a lot of the people that did mine during the summer were part-time miners, to be honest with you. They'd come for their 2 weeks off, a two-week vacation, and they'd come mine. And when they did, they left an awful lot of money behind at the stores and the RV parks and, you know, the mining shops, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know what they're doing. I'm living off of what I mined before and a small pittance that happens to be granted to me by one of my relatives. You know, it's very hard. I know of a couple of miners that have lost their houses because of this. It is a severe impact upon the local economy and of course of the miners themselves.
And so besides people's ability to earn a living, let's look at this from the nonsense side. So let's say we don't care if miners can make a living. We just don't care. We don't want them to do it because we think it's bad and we believe all the imaginary science and you know, we're completely taken in by all the false information. What is the detriment to this, besides the fact that now the river bottom gets hard and the fish can't lay their eggs properly and all those things? What are some other impacts for people?
Well, obviously, to the county, there's loss of property values. There's loss of tax dollars from sales taxes and gas taxes, et cetera, et cetera. There are businesses that are going under because they no longer have the tourist dollars to support them. And into that effect, there are more and more people that are looking to the government and say, well, you took away my living, now you can support me. You know, it's a greater burden on society.
Yeah, with fewer and fewer people producing.
Fewer and fewer producing, and more with their hand out.
Interesting. Yeah. So what's scheduled for this? Are people planning on going to Sacramento about it, or is this just
you know, weigh in through, I didn't look at this actually, can they weigh in via email? Is that the link you're going to send them?
Yes, you can weigh in via email, or you can write your comments and mail them in to any one of the regional offices. It needs to be done by the 5th of March by 5 o'clock. So the time frame on this one is very short.
Okay, so people have to do this today. It's a Sunday, so do this today and fire it off and have those comments in by tomorrow.
Yeah, the best argument is to email it.
Okay.
Flood his email.
Perfect. And do you know the email address right off the top of your pointy head there? Sounds of a struggle.
You're going to ask me that. Hang on. My pointy little head.
Off the top of your pointy head.
Submitted to DFG via email at dfgsuctiondredge@dfg.ca.gov.
Nice. Do it one more time for us.
Okay. DFG Suction Dredge, and dredge is spelled D-R-E-D-G-E, at dfg.ca.gov.
Nice. And we will make sure that that is on the website. So if you are listening to this on the radio, go to wethepeopleradio.us and all that info will be there for you. Because we try not to talk about problems without having at least some kind of solution. And in the absence of solution, we just we talk about the problem some more and then make fun of it.
Well, yeah, and if you don't enclose any other comment, then, gee, this seems like an inordinately short period of time to comment. That's a fair comment, too.
Because it's been open, two weeks?
This comment period is like 15 days.
And normally, what is it?
90.
Oh, yeah. On everything, and it doesn't matter what the issue is, huh?
No.
What the heck?
We would rather not have your comments to start with, is what the Fish and Game is telling you.
Keep your comments to yourself. Are we going back to the, what was it, the EIS, Environmental Impact Statement, going back to our jokes about that? If you missed it, it was in the first hour, but it was fun. All right, so anything else reporting in from Siskiyou County? You guys have some snow?
The snow is starting to clear and melt here, and my water tank is spewing over the top, which means it's full.
Nice. Can't go wrong there. Hey, that reminds me, okay, when you go out to your claim, I thought about this on the break. When you go out to your claim, do you have an easement to get to your claim, or do you have to have a road that goes there? And it's not like when you build a house, you have to have ingress and egress, or how's that go?
Well, actually, to my claim, there is a Forest Service road that runs right alongside of it, and then there is an old stagecoach road that crosses over it back and forth several times.
Oh.
So access to my claim is very, very easy. But technically, under the law, if there's not a road there, I could create one. Of course, let's not talk about the permits required for that.
No, because that's a whole different beat. And mining claims date back to when? Like, what are some of the oldest claims you know of?
Well, the oldest claim under this law is 1866. There were claims prior to, and that's why the 1866 law was enacted, was to clarify and clear up the ambiguities from state to state to state and made it uniform. In various areas prior to the advent of law, mining districts set how big the claim was and how often you had to work it. And in the heyday in the 1800s, you were given, a lot of people were given only 20 feet to work, and you had to work it. You couldn't leave, you couldn't take a week off and come back to it. You had to keep up with your neighbor, otherwise they'd give it to somebody who would work it.
Mm. And what about, I know you had a claim jumper up there, and probably don't have time to tell that story because we've got a minute left, but you still have some of the things that existed back in the Old West, like claim jumpers.
Oh, yeah, except that nowadays when somebody jumps your claim, they just slap your wrist and let you go. In the old days, we used to hang them.
So So do you think the old days are better than the new days? Or you won't go there.
Well, in the old days, once we hung them and we dug a hole to put them in, we didn't have to support them. Nowadays, we put them in jail and support them better than most people live.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. We can only hope. We can only hope Bob has the ultimate song for us to go out on. All right, we got to say goodbye to you. Thank you very much, Mike. We hope everybody had a chance to listen to the whole program. If not, go to wethepeopleradio.us, catch up on all the good stuff that's going on.
So we'll go out with the extended mix today of We Are Drinking Tea. This has been We the People on KCNR Shasta Redding. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth, wherever you are.
Yes, and goodbye, Mike. See you later.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Thank you, Mike.
See ya.
KCNR Shasta Redding.
Been following this parade for way too long. Nothing is clearer to see. The jiggies up on this charade, shout with me. We're not drinking your Kool-Aid, we're drinking tea.
AM 1460 KCNR taking you down memory lane. A We the People replay from 5 years ago yesterday, March 4th, 2012, with our special guest, and we honor him today, the late Mike Adams, on all things mining.